जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव, राधा माधव श्री राधे, जय राधे श्याम, राधे श्याम ललित विशाख, जय राधे श्याम, जय किशोर किशोरी, जय किशोर किशोरी, किशोर किशोरी, जय किशोर किशोरी, जय जय प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद, जय श्रील प्रभुपाद, जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। श्री श्री किशोर किशोर की जय। जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्र महारानी की जय। श्री श्री गौर निताय की जय। श्री भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती ठाकुर की जय। श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। वैष्णव भक्त वृंद की जय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णे स्वादमुपगते धर्मज्ञानादिभिः सह कलो नष्टादृशम् एष पुरनर्को दिनोदिता। सर्ववेदान्तसारं हि श्रीभागवतमीष्यते तत्र सामृतचित्तस्य। नान्यत्र स्याद्वृति क्वचित् परमानन्दपाताय प्रेमवर्षक्षरायते सर्वदा सर्वसेव्याय श्रीकृष्णाय नमोऽस्तु मे सदा सेव्य सदा सेव्य। श्रीमद्भागवती कथा यस्य श्रवणमात्रेण हरिश्चित्तं समाश्रयेत्। हरे कृष्ण, गुड मॉर्निंग। वी आर एट इट अगेन विद आवर इंटिमेट लिटिल सर्कल ऑफ Kishor Kishori's devotees, reading the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Today we're doing verse 47. We are coming to a close of this chapter. I think there's just five more verses. Hitanyan bhajate yam shri Padasparsha Shaya Sakrit Swatma Dosha Pavargena Tadyatshya Janamohini Hitanyan Bhajate Yamshri Padasparsha Shaya Sakrit Swatmadosha Pavargena Tadyarcha Janamohini. Please chant. hitva, giving up. Anyan, others. Bhajate, worships. Yam, which Lord? Shri, the goddess of fortune. Padasparsha, for the touch of his lotus feet. Ashaya, with the desire. Asakrit, constantly. Swa-atma, of herself. Dosha, the faults of fickleness and pride. Apavargena, putting aside. Tut, his. Yachna, begging. Jana, ordinary humans. Mohini, bewildering. In the translation, hoping for the touch of his lotus feet, the goddess of fortune perpetually worships him alone, leaving aside all others and renouncing her pride and fickleness. That he begs is certainly astonishing to everyone. And the purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Supreme Master of the Goddess of Fortune herself obviously does not have to beg for food, as pointed out here by the Brahmanas, who are finally manifesting real spiritual intelligence. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutade Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Alita Shri Vishakan Vitangscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Taptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. Good morning. So, I just wanted to say before I start, today is a really, really special day. It's Vasant Panchami. It is Saraswati Puja. It is the appearance day of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who is Vrishabhanu Maharaj in Krishna Leela. It's the appearance day of Raghunath Das Goswami. It's the appearance day of Raghunandan Thakur. It's the disappearance day of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I think I'm even missing something. It's such a big day with so many wonderful personalities. Let's just see. And Srimati Vishnupriya Devi. It's also her appearance day, the wife of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, what a day we find ourselves on. I say this because I really hate for myself whenever I find out about it at the end of the day before I go to bed, and that's happened to me a lot in the last year, and so Maybe this helps somebody that they just get told in the beginning. It just happened to me actually with Gopal Bhatta Goswami's appearance day. And I was going to bed and then I saw on my phone, oh, it was Gopal Bhatta Goswami's appearance day today. And I said, oh my God, come on, you know, such an important person, such an important day. And I just, you know, it's like you miss out on an opportunity to really tap into the mercy. These people are much more, they're always present, but Prabhupada says they're very present in these days. And so, yeah, it's nice when we remember in the beginning. It's like Ekadashi, like the other day, Damodar, you got me with that false alarm. So, anyway, sorry, that's a little tangent. So I'll just reread the translation. Hoping for the touch of his lotus feet, the goddess of fortune perpetually worships him alone, leaving aside all others and renouncing her pride and fickleness. That he begs is certainly astonishing to everyone. So this is the yogic brahmanas. They're glorifying Krishna, and they're also expressing the extent of their bewilderment. And this is kind of in the form of a justification or an excuse. It's not a bad one, but basically what they're saying is they're saying, how could we have known that this was Vishnu who was coming to us to beg? He's not supposed to beg. The thing which everyone is begging for, the very abode of all wealth and beauty, Sri Devi, she's sitting at his lotus feet, begging him for a little bit of service. So this is very bewildering for us, Tadyachna Janamohini. This begging of his is completely bewildering for us and for anyone else who hears about it. So we can't really be blamed too much. And they're right, actually. They can't be blamed too much. And we see they're not. Inimical people, they just didn't have a high realization, and now they're coming to a higher realization by the association of their wives. But they're saying, how could we understand this? How could we know? And in the next verse, not to steal any thunder, I won't go too much into it, but they'll directly say, we even heard that Krishna, or that Vishnu, would take birth in this Satvata dynasty, and that he actually had, and that he was amongst the Yadus. But how could we know that this Krishna, we couldn't believe it, and how could we know it was this Krishna? So they're expressing their bewilderment and disbelief in the midst of expressing their disqualification and the sorrow that they feel at having not taken that opportunity in comparison to their wives. But this immediately reminded me of something from a pastime that I very, very much like, and maybe a year ago, I spent a lot of time rereading because it really hit me in the heart somewhere. And the brahmanas, they really do have quite a justified argument here, because Krishna also makes this argument about himself. He says in Sudama Vipralila, when Sudama goes to bring the chipped rice as a pretense just to see Krishna, because his wife was, who was also a pure soul, was telling him, please go beg Krishna. He was your childhood friend and he loves the brahmanas. Go, brahmana hitayacha. Rupa Goswami has written this verse. He's very, very charitable to the brahmanas. He only wants the hitta, which means the auspiciousness and the welfare of the brahmanas. He cares for that. So Sudama's wife said, you go. He's very nice to the brahmanas. You just ask him for something. You just allude to the fact that you're not in a very good condition, and he'll give you so much and we won't have to worry. And she wasn't thinking for herself, because actually she was seeing that her husband was suffering so much and was thinking, if I can just convince him to go ask, he won't suffer as much. So she wasn't thinking of her own suffering. And so Sudama, he stepped out and he decided, okay, I'll go. So on a pretense, he brought this chipped rice to Dwarka. The chipped rice was the pretense to give him an excuse to go. At least now I have a gift, I have something I can present, like that. And when Krishna received that chipped rice, I'm just abridging the whole thing to get to the point I want to make. When Krishna received that chipped rice, one of our acharyas, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who today left the world, he gives an insight into Krishna's thought process, which is very amazing. Krishna thinks, when he receives the chipped rice, he thinks, this is such a precious gift. This is such an amazing thing that he's given to me. Now, mind you, this chipped rice, for one, it was begged for by Sudama's wife. So in Vedic culture, there are different grades of foodstuffs, and especially with grains. And another one of our acharyas has explained that this particular chipped rice was of the lowest quality, which means in the grading system of however they did it in village life back in, you know, ancient India, the lowest grade meant that it was the stuff that was chewed on by the rats and that was thrown, because you have your stock of chipped rice and you say, oh, the rats were in this one. You see the holes, you see some droppings, something. And they take it and they throw it in the street, and then the beggars can go and they can pick it up. Because it's, anyway, they don't have a standard. They're beggars, they've taken vows. Either they're beggars because they're destitute, or they're beggars because they're sadhus, and they don't see the difference either way, and they don't mind. So Sudama's wife had obtained some of this chipped rice, this very, very bad, bad chipped rice. It was already eaten by a rat. Something was in there. And then Sudama took it and he carried it underneath his arm. He didn't have anywhere to put it. He had one small piece of cloth that barely wrapped around his body. And so he sweat in it, because India's hot, and he walked probably 1,000 miles. If you wanted to go to Dwarka or see Krishna or something, you took a walk. We hear about the pilgrimages in Chaitanya Charitamrita. They would go from Bengal to Jagannath Puri once a year, or once in every couple of years. I think once a year they would go to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That meant walking 600, 700, 800 miles. Indian people knew how to walk back then. You wanted to go somewhere, you get on your feet, you follow the river. And so he was walking with this chipped rice under his arm, and he was sweating on it. And even he was so poor, he ate some of it. He took a little of the chipped rice, because again, it wasn't he wasn't so fixated on the rice and offering it to Krishna so much. It was just a pretense. He just wanted to see Krishna. When he got there, he didn't even plan to give it to him. But Krishna forced him to give it to him, because Krishna likes to play tricks on his devotees and also likes to expose their devotion. And so Krishna thought, this chipped rice that's been chewed on by the rats, that Sudama's been sweating on for maybe a couple months, and that he even ate some of, is the best gift I could imagine to receive. And the reason why, he actually says, it's such a nice gift, I can't even repay it. I can't pay Sudama back for this. You understand this, Jack? But does it make any sense to you? Yeah. Okay, we can go with the vague one, but it's a little bewildering. Why is it? Why is it so special? That's... It was a bit of a rhetorical question. So, it's so special. Krishna says, it's so special because it's better than anything that I have. So just to make it even more difficult, this is more wonderful than anything I possess. And Krishna possesses the three worlds. He possesses the Vaikuntha planets. He possesses everything. It's better than anything I possess. Why? Krishna says, because he begged for it. Because he's giving me something that he doesn't even rightfully have. Technically, it's not even really his. He begged for it, and he got something outside of his means and gave that thing to me. And I own everything. So I can't beg anyone for anything, because anything I go and beg for, it's mine already. And so Krishna's thought process is, he says, my devotee has beat me. He's won at this game. He beat me by giving me this thing. And he's so moved. Actually, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives a beautiful analogy. Because Krishna doesn't fulfill Sudama's desire right then in Dwarka. He doesn't say, okay, I understand, here. And he doesn't give him all of the opulence of the three worlds, because he gives him opulence better than Indra. He doesn't give him the opulence of the three worlds right there in front of all the Vrishnis. Actually, he waits until Sudama leaves, and then when Sudama arrives back at his home, he sees that his home it looks like Dwarka. He thinks, my God, did I turn around? And am I back in Dwarka? What is this heavenly place? My house is supposed to be here. So he looked around, he's like, there's the neighbor's house. That's my village over there. What is this? He's amazed. And then, again, we get an insight. Sudama has a realization. He says, Krishna felt so embarrassed by only being able to offer me something that was within his means, even because I offered him something that was outside of my means. And then Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur gives this beautiful analogy that the farmer, using the water from the rain cloud, he takes whatever is produced in the field and he offers it to the cloud. Because this is Indra Puja, Indra Yagya. This is what they do in Vedic society. Even in most cultures in all over the world, there's a harvest festival. And there's a season where when before you do the harvest, you offer some of whatever the first crops are to whatever deity is worshipped in that culture, or to the earth. Some, you know, maybe Native American cultures offer it to the earth. You know, different cultures do different things, but generally this process is there. You take whatever is harvested and you offer it back to where it came from. So similarly, the farmers, they offer all of this to the cloud, because the cloud gives rain. And then the cloud, because he feels that what he's giving is so insignificant, he doesn't reciprocate immediately, and he waits until the farmer goes to sleep and he gives water at night, because he feels embarrassed to even give it, because he feels, you're giving me so many nice things. You're giving me corn, and corn isn't such a nice thing. You're giving me, I can only think of low-class vegetables, potatoes, tomatoes, broccoli, cauliflower, what, so many nice things, wheat, grains, and I can only give you water. Even though water is actually the best of things, it's the most life-giving, nourishing, wonder, without water there's nothing. So the cloud, even though he's really giving such an amazing thing, he feels out of his humility, what I'm giving is so low. So similarly, Krishna, he gives the opulence of the world, he gives his very self to Sudama. But he feels, oh, I'm not able to give enough, and so I'll give in silence. This is the heart of Krishna. This is how Krishna, he is with his devotees. Because this is what Krishna wants ultimately. And we see a shred of this in Dwarka, because it's very close to Vrindavan in Tattva. It's almost as close as you can get as far as the abodes of Vishnu, as far as Ayodhya and whatever planet Nisringadev is on, and all the other Vaikuntha planets, and so many different places. Dwarka is close, so we start to see, which is why the Dwarka pastimes are enumerated, we start to see Krishna more in his element. But in Vrindavan, we really see Krishna in his element. We see Krishna where he wants to be, and we see Krishna as who he wants to be. Because he's not interested in being God. He's God for so many people in so many places, and playing that role in so many different ways for the sake of the worshippers that want to see him like that. And there is some pleasure in that for him. But he comes right out, and he tells, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he tells us in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that, I'm not really satisfied by this. This type of devotion is very feeble, because it's just based on my opulence and people worshiping me because of all the things I do, rather than who I am. Or even who I am being kind of they're worshiping the position. Now, this isn't to denigrate the love of the devotees in Vaikuntha or Ayodhya. Ayodhya is also very personal. Everything in the spiritual world is extremely personal. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is pointing out an important distinction, that Swayam Bhagavan, that Krishna, he's after something altogether much more intimate. Much, much more intimate. And he shows this to various devotees. He showed it to Lord Brahma, because Lord Brahma was, I don't know if he was a Sakama Bhakta. The Sakama Bhaktas are the demigods like Indra, those with desires. But he was a devotee with a lower level of realization, who was fixated on the power of Vishnu, who spoke to him the Bhagavatam. And he gave him a realization of Vrindavan. He showed it to Uddhava, who was the dearest devotee, the best of the devotees in Dwarka. He brought him to Vrindavan and showed him this is real devotion. Because Uddhava was a little bit proud. He was the best student of Brihaspati, and he was Krishna's most intimate friend. It said that Uddhava and Krishna would speak, and when they spoke in the court, they practically spoke their own language. They didn't have to speak quietly, because even if you stood right next to them and heard what they said, you wouldn't understand what they were saying, because they spoke in codes, and they were so intimate. They were so, so intimate. So Uddhava, he had some it's transcendental, mind you, an addendum. It's transcendental pride, but he had a little pride, which is, for transcendental devotees, that's okay. Pride is also there in the spiritual world. Many, many devotee Krishna is proud in the spiritual world, and other devotees are also proud. Madhu Mangal is very proud of him, his being a brahmana. You have to feed me, you have to give me a ladu, I'm a brahmana, blah, blah, blah. So Uddhava was a little proud. And Krishna wanted to give him more because he loved him so much, and he wanted to show the rest of the world, the rest of existence, the nature of Raj through Uddhava. And so he showed Uddhava, this is really me. And this, I am really me in relation to these people. He showed Uddhava the Vrajvasis, he showed him Nandamaraj, Mother Yashoda, who hadn't spoken or even moved in 100 years. She just sat in her living room doing nothing, staring at the curtains, thinking, where did he go, where did he go? He showed him the gopis and Radharani, which we'll eventually come to. So we're some, my God, in the great expanse of the Bhagavatam, we're some 20 or 30 chapters away from the height of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. We're 20 or 30 chapters away from the reason Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this world. So it's quite amazing. And the reason he showed all these devotees these things, Brahma, Uddhava, and ultimately the world, is because this is what really gives him satisfaction, and this is what really satisfies his devotees. This is where real, deep, the deepest pleasure is relished by these transcendental people. And what's required is God not being God, and doing things like we hear in this verse, going and begging. Vishnu could never go in Vaikuntha and go and beg someone for something. They'd be, no, what are you doing? No, please just go there. We're going to have 5 people massage your feet, and we have all these guys there in line wanting to sing for you. There's no question of asking for anything. The devotee's there, they know exactly what he wants, when he wants it, they do it on time, pakka. That's the Sri Vaishnav spirit. Everything is pakka. You look at their deity worship, it's like on time, the same prep, cooked by the same guy, the same way for 1,000 years. It's pakka, perfect. That's Vishnu, that's Vaikuntha, and that's beautiful. That's beautiful. But Krishna is saying, there's something more. And so in Vraj, he doesn't play this role. He does so many things. He steals. He lies. The devotees think, he needs my help. Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini, when he's small, to test him and just to play with him, they'll say, can you go get your father's shoes? And when he's, 1, 2 years old, and Nandamaraj is a big man, and he has these big wooden shoes, because padukas are wooden and they're clunky and they're heavy. If they're quality, they're made out of hard wood, they're very heavy. So Krishna struggles to pick them up and keep them on his head, and he can't even do it. And they fall down, and one falls down, and they all laugh. And they think, he can't do it, he won't be able to do it. We're just playing with him. So like this, these things, I must correct him, Mother Yashoda thinks. He's going to grow up and be a thief if he keeps doing all these terrible things. He's going to grow up and he's going to be a little rascal. And then that rascaldom is going to turn into more than just little rascaldom. He's going to be a bad person. And so I have to chastise him. Mother Yashoda thinks this about God, about Krishna. His friends think, I'm going to beat him today at wrestling. They don't even think, I'm going to try to beat him. They think, I've beat him every day. He's never going to be able to beat me at wrestling. And Krishna loses that fight almost every time. This is Krishna. His friends make fun of him after Mother Yashoda tied him up. They have a special nickname for him. I can't remember what that nickname is. I'm sorry. But this name is birthed after him being tied up. by Mother Yashoda. And they tease him anytime they want to get on his nerves. You're like this. You remember that time you were tied up? Yeah, you think you're big. You think you do all these funny things, and you think you're slick. But you remember the time your mother showed you're not very slick. So this is Krishna. And actually, I wanted to share one thing, because today is the appearance day of Raghunath Das Goswami, and he's in one prayer that he's written, he's given an indication which points to another aspect of this, Krishna being in Vrindavan and not being God. In his Govardhan Vasaparthana Dashrakam, he's written a beautiful verse that's Rasanidhi Navayuno Sakshinim Dana Kele Jiti Parimalavidham Shamavidim Prakasya Rasikavarakulanam Modamas Padayanme Nijanikatanivasam Dehi Govardhanatvam. So Rasanidhi Navayuno, the ocean of ecstatic relationships. Navayuno, these two, Radha and Krishna. Sakshinim Dana Kele. The Don Kaili Leela, which is the tax collector Leela, takes place. At this place, the Jyuti Parimala Vidham, the Shamavedi, which if you've ever been to Vrindavan, if you're in Govardhan town, it's just near the Bhaktivedanta Palace, just across the street actually from the Bhaktivedanta Palace where Vaisheshika Prabhu does his readings. It's right there. It's a very special place, and it's called Rasika Varakulana Modamaspalayanmai. It's that place which the Rasika Vada, the best of all of the Rasik devotees, which this is Raghunath Das Goswami saying this, he's our Prayojanacharya. He is literally the best of the Rasik devotees. He is the person who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appointed to point out the highest aspects of our philosophy and their goal. And he's saying, Rasika Vada Kulana Modamas Palayanme. These best of devotees, they're very pleased by this pastime. And so in this pastime, what generally happens is the gopis, because they carry milk to and from villages, and they transfer the milk around, and they churn butter, they're cowherd ladies. And so they go by Govardhan with their milk pots and their yogurt pots on their head, usually yogurt and butter, and they carry it. And at this particular place, whenever they come past it at Govardhan, they know Krishna is going to be around because he's always somewhere around, and he's always harassing them and stealing their butter. And so he comes, and one of the genius things that he does is he dresses up like a tax collector, and he'll pop out from behind one of the rocks of Govardhan, and he says, "Hey, have you paid your taxes today? What is this? You haven't paid your taxes today. You have to pay. I'm the tax collector of the king, Nanda Maharaj. You can't walk this path. You know, you can't sell your butter without paying your taxes." And so the gopis, they say, "This is ridiculous. What is this nonsense? We know who you are. You're dressing up. This is ridiculous." And he said, "Listen, you're just simple, foolish women. You pay your taxes and then I'll go on my way." And so then Lalita Devi, who is one of Srimati Radharani's closest friends, she becomes quite angry because she is very much in the mood of chastising Krishna and protecting Radharani, and that's her service, is to put obstacles in between Radha and Krishna's love so that feeling can be heightened. She begins to chastise Krishna, and she says, "You rascal, you do this all the time, and it's ridiculous, it's completely unfounded. You call yourself the son of a king. But Radharani's father is also, he has just as many cows as your father. What kind of a king is your father, and therefore what kind of a prince does that make you? What kind of a tax collector are you? What makes you any different from us? You have no right to do this." And then Krishna goes, "You see this hill? Don't you remember? I lifted this hill." And you say, "I have no power. I lifted this hill. Can you lift the hill?" And Lalita Devi, because she's witty, she's quick, and she's fiery, she goes, "You lifted the hill. You lifted Govardhan Hill, Krishna. Okay. Which hand did you lift it with?" And he goes, "My left hand. To show that I'm very strong. I don't even need my right hand. This is my right hand is my good hand. I lifted it with my left hand. And what to speak of my left hand, I lifted it with my left pinky." So now he's bragging. But he doesn't understand. Lalita Devi has him caught. Because Lalita Devi says, Srimati Radharani is always on your left side. Actually, all the power in your left arm comes from her. Therefore, she lifted Govardhan Hill. Everything's coming from her. Therefore, you should pay her. This is ridiculous. Get out of here. You know, go away with your taxes and all this nonsense. And Krishna, the reason I'm telling this is it illustrates the point I was bringing earlier, that Krishna, he's not God in Vrindavan. He's not all-powerful in Vrindavan. He doesn't know what to say. He loses. And then he gets frustrated and angry, and because he doesn't have anything to say, he's been completely logically defeated. Lalita Devi won. For all intents and purposes, she's smarter than him. Usually the gopis are a little more intelligent than him in these types of things. And he takes his stick and he breaks the yogurt pots and leaves angry. And they become so infuriated because they think, he resorted to violence. What is this nonsense? This is ridiculous. You know, you're not even civilized. And so then he can't even see Radharani, he can't even see the gopis, and he has to go and he has to beg. You please forgive me, please, I'm sorry. And she refuses him. She says, no, no, I won't see you. No, 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 I can't forgive you. This is ridiculous what you did. You're like a child. I shouldn't see you anymore. And he has to beg, and he has to beg. And anyway, this is Leela. It ultimately, they come back together. It's all for facilitating the fact that their Leela must go on. But the point is there. He loses the fight. He loses the argument. Then he has to beg. You please, please accept me. Please forgive me. This is Krishna. This is Krishna. This is the nature of Krishna, and this is what the Bhagavatam ultimately is coming to give us. This is what, because Krishna is the Bhagavatam, he's trying to allow us to enter into this realm, particularly through this 10th canto, through hearing these wonderful descriptions. Because the Bhagavatam, right from the outset, explains to us that it's trying to push us towards the absolute highest thing that we can imagine. It's trying to push us towards the greatest understanding of Krishna's heart. That's what the Bhagavatam has come to give. And it does that by telling us something that most devotees have heard and that is very inspiring from the beginning because it sounds very fired up. This is Dharma Projita Kaitavo Tra Atra. Here in this, all cheating religions are kicked out. Every form of cheating is removed. All the cheaters, they get their just dues when it comes to the Bhagavatam. Things are finished. And Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Jyutam Chalayatam Asmi. He says, of cheaters, I'm gambling. He says, I'm the best form of cheating. If you want to cheat, come try and cheat me. I'll show you the house always wins. You come and try and work your system. You try to make things, you know, carve things out in such a way that you're comfortable. Try to cheat me and practice bhakti at the same time. It's not going to work. So he explains this. And the Bhagavatam, it is actually the form of Krishna which we can argue does this the best. In the Bhagavatam we hear a story about the churning of the milk ocean where the demons and the demigods, they go because they're interested in getting nectar, and they take them under a mountain on the back of Kurma, and they churn with I believe it's Vyasaki as the rope, they churn the ocean for nectar. And when that nectar comes out, many other things also come out, but when that nectar comes out, they all begin fighting over it. Because the demons are more powerful, they get the pot of nectar. Even though the purpose of the sacrifice was actually what the demigods had prayed for, to get the heavenly planets back from the demons. So it seemed like, what's all going wrong? What's happening? Even though Vishnu was here and he's practically overseeing the thing, everything is going haywire. But the demons, because of their demonic nature, they start fighting each other over the pot also, so nobody can drink it. So they get it from the demigods, and then they start fighting each other. No, I'll drink first. No, I'm the biggest demon. I'm the best of the daityas. And meanwhile, someone else comes out of the milk ocean, Mohini Murti, which is Krishna in the form of a very, very beautiful woman, the most beautiful of women you can imagine. Because it's Krishna who is the most beautiful, the reservoir of all beauty, Krishna, Ram, the reservoir of all pleasure, has now taken the form of a beautiful woman. And he comes and walks up to the demons, or she walks up to the demons, and they all become bewildered. They say, whoa, who are you? This is, who are you? Whose daughter are you? You know, we were fighting each other, but now we just, you know, please, actually, can you help us? They ask her out of their bewilderment and trying to flatter her. They say, oh, intelligent lady, can you help us? Can you tell us who is most fit to drink this nectar first? Because each one of them is thinking, I'm most fit, and each one of them also now wants her as his wife, wants to enjoy her. And she says, okay, I'll give you my advice, but under one condition. No matter what I do, whether it's good or bad, you have to accept it. And the demons, she literally says this. That's the verse. I don't have the verse memorized, but she says, whether it's good or bad, whether you like it or not. No, she doesn't even say, take what I say to be good. She just says, whether I cheat you or not, you have to accept it. And so they say, okay, no problem. You're really pretty. That's literally what happens. And so then she cheats them. She gives the nectar to the demigods. So our Acharya, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains the Bhagavatam is exactly the same way. That the Bhagavatam presents different things to different people with the goal of giving them their ultimate welfare. What is it? Nishreyasa Lokasya. This Bhagavatam is meant for the highest welfare of everyone, ever, anywhere in the universe, in any universe. Nishreyasaha Lokasya. And so this Bhagavatam acts like Mohini Murti. It's a form like Mohini Murti in that it cheats everyone who comes with their different intentions and their different motives and somehow convinces them to hear about Krishna and then becomes sucked into the reality, which ultimately culminates in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he demonstrates this in a really profound way, because he's made quite a strong statement here, but he has really good ammunition to back it up. It's really, really cool. I'm going to try to explain it, and I apologize in advance if it doesn't go so well, because it's quite technical. It's really nice if it comes across the right way, but it's a little bit technical and will be difficult, so I hope that it's his appearance day. If he wants it to be heard nicely, then it'll be heard nicely. And if not, then I'm sorry in advance. So the first verse of the Bhagavatam is Janmadyasya yaton vayaritaratas charteshvabhigya surat Tene brahma hridaya adhikavaye muyanti yatsurayo Tejo varimridam yata vinimayo yatra trisagam rasha Dhamna svena sada nirastakuhakam Satyam param dhimahi. Now he says, we can take this verse in one way, which is a very general way. It's the absolute truth. Satyam param dhimahi. Even the first line, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It can be taken by anyone, a jnani, an impersonalist, anyone that hears it. And Vasudev just means that which pervades everything. That's Vasudev. Vasudev. That which is from that which pervades everything. And Satyam Param Dhimahi. Let us meditate on that. Which is Satyam Param. It's the supreme absolute truth. It. And then, to really appeal to these people, this verse starts speaking sutras from the Vedanta Sutra. Janmad Yasya Yataha. This is the second sutra of Vedanta Sutra. From that thing, Asya, Janma Adi Yataha. Everything comes. The birth, the destruction, and the maintenance of this world come from that. Again, very vague. Speaking about the absolute truth. This is very appealing to those who have studied the Gyanic scriptures, to those who study the Upanishads. It's very, very nice. Anvayat itaratacha. That thing is the efficient cause, the material cause, and is also time. In other words, everything comes from it, and merges back into it at the end. And in the meantime, it's everything is affected by it, and that's how all of the changes that happen in the universe are being undergone. Arteshu abhigya swarat. This indicates another Vedantic verse from the Vedanta Sutra, ikshaterna shabdat. That thing, again, this thing, the absolute truth, can be described by Shastra. Because arteshu abhigya, it knows ultimately, it's the knower or the reservoir of all knowledge, of all real things, and swarat, it's independent. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye. That which was spoken to Lord Brahma, the Adikavi, the original poet, so to speak, the original learned Vedantist in the universe, is none different from that thing, satyam param dhimahi. Muyanti yat suraya. And it bewilders all people. In other words, it's not a person. Etena netaro nupapate. This is also a Vedantic Upanishadic verse, which means it's not a person. It's not a jiva. Now, for us, person means, there's a difference between person and jiva. But for your general understanding, for somebody who's an Advaitin or somebody who just, he's a jnani, if you say it's not a jiva, then they take that to mean it's not an embodied person. It's the absolute truth. And again, satyam param dhimahi. Nirasta kuhakam. And if you want to argue about this, tarka apratishtanat. Actually, in talking about things like this, transcendental matters, then tarka, or argument, it has no inherent value. So, basically, what the Bhagavatam is saying to these people is that I've just quoted a bunch of the sutras that you study. I've just quoted 6 Vedantic sutras in the first verse in order to win their approval and their understanding so that they'll study the literature further. And said, and culminated with, Dhamna swena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi. So you should meditate on that absolute truth which is propounded in the Bhagavatam. Because ultimately argument will not get you anywhere. And the only way that you can have more of an understanding of it is by experiencing it. So this is a nice meaning. It's certainly packed with a lot. There's even more there that I haven't given. It's actually about 6 pages, what I just described. And yet, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, that's just the first one. There's a second explanation, which points to Krishna. Because again, just like Mohini Murti, she appears differently to different people. Krishna appears differently to different people. The Bhagavatam appears differently to different people. Depending on the consciousness you read the Bhagavatam with, you will get something different from it. This is the Bhagavatam's ultimate trickery to draw people into the pastimes of the 10th canto. So the second explanation, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, you guys are all fools. Everybody who read the verse the first way is foolish. Satyam param dhimahi means meditate on Krishna. The demigods have said this. Because in the second chapter of the 10th canto, when Krishna takes birth in the prison house of Kamsa, when he takes birth to Devaki, the demigods, they say prayers to him, right in front of Devaki and Vasudev. And they say this, Satyavratam Satya Param Tri Satyam. So this verse is saying, Satyam Param Dhimahi. The demigods are also saying, you are Satya Param. You are the supreme truth. So he's saying, you fools. You're thinking of from the perspective of this Upanishadic stuff and from the perspective of the Vedanta Sutra. The Bhagavatam is talking about Krishna. And then he says, actually, what this verse is doing, this verse is describing Krishna's pastimes. Janmad yasya yataha. From there, in other words, from the prison house where Krishna took birth, janma, from his birth, adi asya. From that place, anvayat, instead of difference, means anu ayat, which means he went. Itarata, elsewhere. Where else did he go? He left the prison house of Devaki and Vasudev and he went to Vraj. Why did he go? Swarat. Because he's dependent on his devotee's love. Because he knew. Normally, Swarat means he's independent. But if we take the word and we break it down in a different way, it means Virajate Swahi, which means Swahi means by the people that he loves, and Virajate means controlled. So because he's controlled by the love of Nanda Maharaj, and by the love of Yashoda Mata, and by the love of the gopis, and by the love of the cowherd boys, he went there. He left his parents. And then he left again. And he went elsewhere after that. Abhiga Arteshu, knowing his own purposes, killing Kamsa, re-establishing Dharma, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, he left again to reciprocate with the other devotees who were also in Dwarka. And then Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says, don't consider him a fool for doing this. Because the next line, Dene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye, shows that to show that he's not foolish and to show that these are actually transcendental qualities, everything that he's done. Because again, we're now establishing it above the fact that we're just talking about the absolute truth. He's saying he performed Brahma Vimohan Leela. Brahma, the most realized being in the universe. He bewildered him and showed him something higher than he already knew. So he performed Brahma Vimohan Leela. And then this verse is explaining his form. Tejo Varimirdam Yata Vinimayo. The gunas are material and temporary. Yata Yatra Trisargo Mrsha. But he who created them, where they come from, where they are manifested from, is not. In other words, Krishna's form is perfect and wonderful. And it's transcendental. Damna Swena Siddha Nirastakuhakam. And O Jnanis, O Mimamsakas, oh, you who are stuck in Vedanta Sutra, you have to understand that by experiencing this thing, all your doubts will be cast away. And if you just sit there and doubt it and try to wrap your intelligence around it, at the end of the day, it's going to be fruitless. So just meditate on that Krishna, Satyam Param Dhimahi. But it goes further. He gives another explanation of the verse, which is in relation to Madhura Ras. So Satyam Param Dhimahi. Satyam Param Dhimahi means that highest, most pure, most perfect rasa, Madhura Rasa. Janmad Yasya Yattaha. Adyasya Adi Asya means the original rasa. So from him, the Madhura Ras was born. Janma, born. Adyasya, the original rasa, Yattaha, from him. Anvayat itarata, and it is nourished by meeting and separation. Anvaya means coming together, and itarata means moving apart, means being separated. So we know that by Krishna meeting his devotees and by him being separated from his devotees, their love increases and increases and increases. So Madhura Ras is being described in this verse. Abhigya Arteshu, and Krishna, he knows everything. He's the most expert hero of Madhura Ras. He is the Abhigya. And he's Swarat. He's the supreme Vishaya. He's the only one that Madhura Ras is actually meant to be reposed in. There are many other heroes that are described in the various Mahakavyas by Kalidas and by Bhatta Muni, and Bharat Muni is given the science. But none of them are worthy because they're all temporary. Because ultimately, they have to die. And so they're not a fit Vishaya. So Swarat indicates that Krishna, he's the ultimate Vishaya that Madhura Ras is supposed to be reposed into. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye. And he, that Krishna, imparted the science of that rasa into the heart of Bharat Muni. He took it and he placed it into the heart of Bharat Muni, knowing that when he came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would have Rupa Goswami take Bharat Muni's writings and then use them to expound the science of rasa for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Muhyanti yat suraya yatra. And in this, all learned persons are bewildered. They can't understand how this could possibly be so. Tejo vari mridam yata vinimayo. Because they mistake descriptions of mundane love as descriptions of actual rasa. Because rasa is also a science that's applicable to the regular world. And so they, the impersonalists, are famous for saying the Madhurya Rasa is the lowest of things in this world. and it's the thing that must be given up the most. It must be given up first, and it's despicable. They're bewildered because they don't understand that it's a reflection of the pure thing that's in the spiritual world. And the proof of that is that these things that they're disgusted by, they're rightly disgusted by because they're contaminated with bibhatsaras, which means decay or filthiness or disgust. Trisargo Mrsha. But in relation to Krishna, these things are transcendental. They're actually not false. They go from being Mrsha, which means false, to Amrsha. They're real. They're perfect. They're wonderful. They're actually stimulants for the highest love. Dhamna Swena Sada Nirasta Kuhakam. Some intellectuals, they don't accept rasa, but they're defeated by its very existence. By the experience of rasa, they're defeated because everyone is hopelessly attracted to rasa. Now, when I heard this one, I was reminded of a story where Srila Prabhupada was invited to speak at a pandal. And also speaking at the pandal, and who was actually supposed to speak before him, was one of the most famous Mayavadis that was staying in Mumbai at the time. And so Prabhupada did a classic Prabhupada move, and he went and he sat in his chair before he got there. Because this Mayavadi had a very grand asana, and Prabhupada had a nice asana, but it was noticeably smaller and to the side. It was obvious that this Mayavadi, he was supposed to preside over the whole ceremony, over the whole pandal. And he was going to be the one given the most respect and yada, yada, yada. And so Prabhupada sat in his chair. And then, because he sat in his chair, they allowed him to speak first. So the Mayavadi was sitting to the side. And Prabhupada knew of him. And so he addressed the audience. And he said, actually, this man here, he's following the Vedanta Sutra. He's very learned. All of you know him. He's very respected. But you should know he has a secret. He may say Vedanta, 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 but when he goes back and when he's alone, he can't help it. He's reading about Radha and Krishna. And the man smiled. He smiled. Because Dhamna Swena Sada Nirasta Kuhakam. They can't help it. It's too beautiful. This rasa, this Madhura rasa. They can't help it. Therefore, so many Mayavadis, they're writing commentaries on Gita Govinda, they're writing commentaries on very elevated literatures, and they're trying to give some slant because really they just want an excuse to be able to read and experience these things because it's too much. They're defeated. They're defeated by the very existence of this thing. And hopefully this isn't getting too boring, I apologize. But there's a fourth explanation that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives, just to give perspective. This is the same verse, these are the same words. And the Bhagavatam is saying so many different things here to different grades of people who have different grades of realization, with the desire to draw them in, cheating them. Actually not cheating them, giving them the best thing. But for them it's like they're being cheated because it's not outwardly what they want. This is the desire of the soul, but they've come with other motives. And the Bhagavatam says, Dharma Projita Kaitavocha Paramo, I'll kick that out. I'll remove all of these things. So, the fourth reading of this verse, Radha Krishna Yugo and Rasa Leela, is what's described by this verse. Can we believe that? That Radha and Krishna and the Rasa Leela are described in this verse. We've already heard that the Absolute Truth is described and ten or so sutras from the Vedanta Sutra. We've heard that Krishna is described as the Supreme Absolute Truth, and we've heard that Madhura Ras, which was delineated by Bharat Muni, have been described. How can this verse possibly describe the Rasa Leela? Satyam Param Dimahi. Let us meditate on Radha and Krishna, who are the Supreme Absolute Truth. As a dual compound, they are together, the Satyam Param, and let us meditate on them. Janmad yasya yataha. From them, Madhurya Ras comes. So still we're taking a little Madhurya Ras because that's their rasa. And then quickly into the description of the Rasa Leela. Itarata, giving up all others, anvayat, he ran behind her, anu ayat. It's a past tense verb, anu means to follow. Anu ayat, he went behind her. Abhigya Arteshu. So Abhigya means an expert, one who knows everything. Arteshu means like the qualities or the things to be known. Arta can mean things to be known. So he's the knower of all the things to be known in relation to Madhura Ras. And so he knows exactly how to please Srimati Radharani. Therefore, he's submissive to her. Anvayat itarata. He leaves everybody else during the rasa dance and he runs behind her. Swarat. Srimati Radharani. She alone remained with him because she controls him. Because Krishna is controlled by bhakti. And who has bhakti? Who has more bhakti than Srimati Radharani? So she completely controls him. Tene brahma hridaya adhikavaye. And to teach this unto him, Tene, Shukadeva Goswami, Brahma, this, the five chapters of the Bhagavatam, the Rasa Leela, into his heart were given. To teach this, he imparted it into the heart of Shukadeva Goswami in the form of the Rasa Panchajaya. Yat Suraya Muhyanti. And the great souls, the Surayas, those great learned people, they are completely bewildered. And what is the form of that bewilderment? This isn't talking about meditators, this isn't talking about yogis, it's not talking about bewilderment in the same sense we were before. From hearing this thing, these Surayas, the great devotees, they become completely intoxicated by ecstasy. Tejo vadi mridam yata vinimayo. Just as the elements reverse their qualities. Like when Krishna plays his flute, the river Yamuna becomes solid as a rock and stops flowing. And the rocks, they all melt. The moon becomes stunned during the rasa dance. Just like all of these things happened, the devotees, they exhibit all these transcendental symptoms when they hear these pastimes. When they hear this pastime of Krishna at the rasa dance, they fall on the ground, tears come from their eyes, their hairs stand on end. Yatra trisargom risha. Dhamma Swena Sadani Rasta Kuhakam. And all the other consorts, because of the excellence of these two, they all emanate out of these two, who are real and unparalleled. Satyam Parantimahi, who are the highest manifestation of the absolute truth. So therefore, we should meditate on that. So this verse is describing the Rasa Leela. And then finally, there's one more. Bhakti itself, the process for attaining Radha and Krishna, is described by this first verse. Satyam param dhimahi. Let us meditate on supremely pure bhakti yoga. Param means supreme, the highest thing. Satyam can also mean pure. So that satyam param means the process of bhakti yoga itself, which gives Radha and Krishna. Yataha janma adyasya. From that, yataha, bhakti, there is the appearance, or the janma, of the original person in the heart of the bhakta. Adyasya. That original person can only be gotten from bhakti. He can only be captured in the heart. As we hear in the second verse of the Bhagavatam, Sadhyo hridya vrdite chakritibi shru shru shrubish tachanan. Just by hearing the Bhagavatam, Krishna becomes captured in the heart. Anvayat, simply by being associated with a drop of bhakti, just a little bit, not even pure bhakti. Well, to speak of pure bhakti, not even bhakti is the main thing being practiced. Itarata arteshu, all other processes like jnana, like karma, like yoga, they bear fruit actually, only in relation to how much concomitant bhakti is there in the process itself. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this in detail in Madhurya Kadambini. And also in his commentary to the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that actually this entire world runs on the basis of bhakti. That nothing can even work if bhakti isn't there to endow it with the power to make it happen. Now that's a much bigger conversation than we can have right now. But anvayat itarata arteshu, simply by being associated with a little bit of this wonderful bhakti yoga, everything else works. And it wouldn't work if it wasn't associated with it. Swarat. Bhakti is a haituki. Bhakti has no cause. It must be given by a devotee. It's independent. You can't say, I want bhakti, and then just get it. You can't go to the store, Amazon Go store, and just pick up a can of bhakti and swipe your phone with your Amazon account. You can't get it by yourself. You cannot decide, I will do bhakti. I am a bhakta. It's given to you. What's the proof for this? Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikavaye. It was revealed to Vyas by Narada. Vyas is the compiler of the Vedas. And even he had to be given it by Narada Muni, who carried it in his heart. But how can omniscient Vyas, how can he be dependent on somebody else? He's supposed to be Bhagavan. Muyanti Yatsuraya. All sages, of all categories, of all types, from the top to the bottom, they're completely bewildered by this, so this shouldn't be very puzzling. Bhakti has to come from a devotee. Vyas had to get it from Narada in order to be empowered to write this book. Tejo vadi mridam yata vinimayo yatra tisargo mrsha. And that bhakti, just like milk, it's pure. But milk can also be burned, it can be diluted, it can be contaminated. So it appears to be made of the gunas. So bhakti, it appears to be mixed with karma, it appears to be mixed with jnana, it appears to be mixed with tamas, with rajas, with sattva. But amrsha, this is false. This is actually just the appearance of these things in the process and coming from the practitioner who will soon be purified. So the process seems to be faulty, or it seems to look like it's been contaminated, because the person practicing it is contaminated. But we should know that by the practice, that contamination will soon go away. Dhamna swena sadhana rastakuakam. And its sweetness ultimately must be experienced. And by that experience, satyam param dhimahi. By that meditation on bhakti yoga, on Radha Krishna Yugal, on Krishna, on the absolute truth, on Madhura Rasa, one actually can attain the goal of the Bhagavatam. Now, just one more verse in order to substantiate this point that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has made in reference to the Bhagavatam appearing differently to different people, because that's what I've tried to shed light on by explaining that first verse. In the 10th canto, 42nd chapter, verse 17, there's a wonderful verse that's spoken as Krishna enters Kamsa's fighting arena. Malanam ashaninuninam nadavaro strinam smaro murtiman gopanam swajana satam shitibujam jasta swapitro shishu mrityor bhojapater virada vidusham tatvam param yoginam vrishninam paradevateti vidito rangam gata sagraja. Vidito rangam gata sagraja. As Krishna entered the arena with his older brother, different people, they knew him in different ways. Malanam ashanir. The wrestlers, Chanura and Mushtika, they saw him as a thunderbolt who was going to kill them. Nrinam naravaraha. And all the men there, they saw him as the best of men. They thought, oh, I'm strong, we're strong, you know, I'm among my friends, I'm very powerful. But when they saw him, this, he's strong. He is brave. He's the abode of all masculine qualities. Strinam smaro murtiman. The women saw him as Cupid. I've never seen somebody so beautiful as this person who's just walked in front of my eyes. Gopanam swajano. And the gopas, Nanda Maharaj and Krishna's friends and the other cowherd men, they just saw their cousin, their brother, their friend. They saw him in a mood of hasirasa. Ah, there's that Krishna, that rascal. He steals, he does all of these things. What's he getting himself into now? Shatam kshiti bhujam shasta. All of the terrible kings who were assembled there, Jarasandha, all the friends of Kamsa, they saw him also as a thunderbolt. They saw him as a chastiser. They saw him as the person who in the future was going to crack their heads and was going to finish them. Swapitro shishu. And his parents, Devaki and Vasudev, they saw their little boy. They saw a seven-year-old boy. They thought, oh my God, he's going to wrestle these two, the strongest men in Kamsa's whole kingdom. He's going to wrestle them. He'll die. They saw their little boy. Mrityu bhojapater. And Kamsa, he saw death incarnate. He had been hallucinating while walking, he'd been seeing Krishna around the corner. He would see his shadow and he would pull out his sword. And then his servant would say, that's your shadow. That's not Krishna. Don't worry. You have so many demons working for you. Everything is, you'll be fine. But he couldn't be pacified because he knew he was going to die. He had heard the prediction. So when he actually saw Krishna, he practically died there. Virad avidusham. And all the materialistic persons, those who had no devotion, who were given to sinful activity, they saw him as a material person. They said, who is this? He'll be killed in an instant. These wrestlers will kill him like nothing. Tatvam param yoginam. For the yogis, he was that para tattva. They saw him as the supersoul. Vrishninam paradevateti. All the Vrishnis, like Ugrasena, Uddhava, all of the people who were residents of Mathura and who weren't inimical and who weren't under Kamsa's sway, they saw him as their worshipable deity, as the Lord of Dwarka, even though Dwarka wasn't manifested yet. So all of these people, they saw Krishna simultaneously, and they all saw completely different Krishnas. The fools, they saw him as a material person. Just like those in universities who study the Bhagavatam, they see it as just another mythological text. They see another book. Oh yes, the poetry has this fault in it. And, you know, we can rewrite this. It could have been written nicer. And it was probably a compilation written somewhere around the year 1300. And it's probably not even a real Purana. They speculate like anything. They have no idea what they're talking about. That's the Bhagavatam giving them that vision, based on their own consciousness. Because Bhagavatam is like Mohini Murti. Bhagavatam presents itself as per the vision of the person who's looking at it. This is very amazing, because if we actually cultivate a nice vision, if we actually cultivate a real understanding of what the goal is, and what we want, and how we would like to serve, that we would like to serve. If we can come to the real understanding that I would like to serve this book, I would like to serve the devotees, then we can actually see what this book wants to present itself to us as, what Krishna wants to show us, what he wants to give us, what he wanted to give and what he gave to Lord Brahma, what he gave to Uddhava, what he gave to his chariot driver Dwarka, what he gave to Sudama Brahmana. He always wants to increase the love of his devotees. So if we can enter into that realm, we can actually gain that. So, I'm sorry, it was a little long-winded. I went 15 minutes early today. If there are any comments or questions, I know it was a little rocky, but that's my feeble attempt to glorify this wonderful Acharya, who has personally given me so much just in his commentary. I'm very thankful to Banu Maharaj for translating it. I don't know, other Krishnarjuna, if you have anything, or if Prabhu has anything.
It's a little late, but since you were highlighting particularly the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti's cause for explanations, in order to draw attention to the fact that understanding Madhura Leela is and the implications of the separation and coming together was the proper way to see Krishna, and making the connection with the initial verse from today, could one say that the Brahmanas had come to a point of understanding through that association with their wives that the scene of Krishna was in that, from that Madhura Leela perspective?
I didn't catch the last part.
So the last part is that, making a connection with today's verse, could one say that these Brahmanas had in fact, through seeing the particularly exalted status of their wives, they'd come to a point of understanding Krishna in the proper perspective, that devotional component, particularly you were drawing from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, maybe it was the second explanation or the third one, of seeing Krishna from the Madhurya Leela perspective. So could one say that these Brahmanas had come to that understanding?
I don't know. I mean, certainly they're associating with their wives, and now they understand the glory of their wives. Definitely they've gotten a much higher level of realization from association with their wives, and now they're going through the fire of repentance, which is only purifying. I don't know if it indicates that they'll now also worship Krishna. Certainly the sages at Dandakaranya, they saw Lord Ram and they thought, why am I in a man's body? You know, I want to worship him in Madhurya Ras. And then they became these Munichari gopis. So it's certainly possible, especially since they're associating with these ladies who have that rasa. What to speak? It's a thing. Some devotees say that the rasa comes. One's rasa will ultimately come from the sadhus that one associates with. And some say that it's something that's inherent. Acharyas have spoken differently in different places about this. So it could be that they take it like that, and then they aspire for Madhurya Ras. And being that they're a part of the Bhagavatam, that's also could be a good indicator. But I don't know. I don't remember reading anything about their particular position, just that they were so fortunate that they had the association of these ladies. And I think Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he mentions that the ladies are Kripa Siddhis, because ultimately they were just given, you know, their realization by meeting Krishna, but I don't remember a mention of the particular perfection or the way of perfection for the Brahmanas. Yeah. Jai. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Sri Kishore Kishori ki jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai, Sri Sri Gornitai ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Vaishnav Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Oh, Krishna.